Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 173 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew. This month, we offer a collection of musical guests who will be performing at the Pickin' in the Backwoods concert, and we'll hear from event organizer Justin Jett. We have interviews with Annie Miller, Suzanne Gillott, and Phil McCowan. We also have essays from Jim Eagleman, Rick Fettig, and Dave Seastrom.
In segment one, we'll hear our interview with Andy Miller as he reminisces about his father, State Trooper Jerry Miller. But first, we'll listen to our discussion with Pickin' in the Backwoods Festival organizer, Justin Jett. And we'll close with Friday's headliner, Jeremy Pinnell's song, Too Much Sugar.
This is Chad Crothers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB. And we have some guests returning to our studio, an annual chat about Pickin' in the Backwoods Music Festival happening this year, August 20th through the 22nd at Explore Brown County. So we are pleased to welcome Justin Jett and Corey Flick. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
First, give us just an overview of everything that's happening with Pickin' in the Backwoods this year.
Okay. It's basically 2.5 days. We got 25 plus bands, and we want it to be really hands-on. You know, we want to encourage people to even bring instruments. We got workshops in place, campfire jams at night. That's pretty unique. You don't usually book a band to pit them around a fire. Lots of vendors, food trucks. You know, if camping on site, you can bring your own drink, food, and just have a good time, basically.
Corey, what about the pre-party event?
Tell us about that. So Thursday from noon to 3, Firebird Tap House, we're having a pre-party event where 3 artists will be featured before the festival gates open. There'll be pre-made packs with barbecue sandwiches, chips, and a drink, and you can grab a beverage as you watch the artist. Sponsored by Surf Pro of Columbus, and we thank them for doing that. And they just built a stage at Firebird, so we have a great little stage out there with a PA system. So if you're coming into town looking something to do before, come see us, noon to 3.
Thursday night, we're doing something a little different. It should be fun, so bring your dancing shoes. We're doing a square dance.
What?
Yep, we're mixing it up. So, and it's a blend of all types of country-ish music. So Americana, the outlaw, the bluegrass, jam grass. Some blues this year. Corey's going to help with one of the workshops.
Yes.
Teaching the harmonica. I just bought one because of him.
Yeah.
So I'm in training. So yeah, the big things this year are the workshops being more interactive.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Tell us about these workshops. Why don't we start, Corey, tell us about this harmonica workshop.
My wife gave me a very good piece of information that I just start talking about the harmonica, and she's like, you have got to go more basic, because I'm around the instrument all day, every day. So my vernacular is going to change so that I can actually teach people how to play a harmonica and tips and tricks and techniques on how you start in the instrument and where you use it and where you stay away from and different genres of music and just learning how to bend notes and things of that nature and then placement on your lips, because that's extremely important for the instrument. So,
well, this is a radio show, but I can see that you have a box of harmonicas in front of you. You want to give us a little sample of what we might hear in that harmonica workshop? So what's something that you just did there that we would learn in the workshop?
So some of the longer notes are called bends. They're draw bends. So I'm going to teach you not only, so there's the vernacular using a harmonica, there's a blow note, and then there's a draw note. So I'm going to be teaching draw bends and different placement of your hands to where you get some of the swells at the end of the notes and things of that nature. And then pretty much just going through, we're going to do a C harmonica. It's a very common harmonica that you can use every day. And I tell everybody, I said, always practice in your car. It's one of the few instruments you can have on you at all times when you're out and about and you play your favorite music and find out what is keyed in G or C, and that's your first lesson.
What other workshops are going to be at Picking in the Backwoods?
Friday and Saturday, we'll have two different dance lessons. One's more of like traditional two-step, and one's more like the flat foot Appalachian style dancing. We got a guy coming in from Alabama, Ramblin' Ricky Tate. He's going to teach like the history of jug music. He's going to demo some jug, talk about jug bands. And Louisville is like the capital start of jug bands, and Memphis, of course, but river towns mainly. But he'll go through all that. We're celebrating 100 years of folk music from Hazel Dickens. So they're going to do a sing-along. We're starting the days off with yoga. And we do have a new thing, too. We're going to have a sober camp area. So people that, you know, you're tempted at places like this to maybe drink too much or drink at all, there'll be designated areas or people like-minded that might not want to partake in that and they don't want to be tempted, but they can still have a good time and enjoy the music. It's cool to see everyone come together.
Well, let's talk about your musical acts. The Saturday night headliner, that's probably going to be your biggest draw. Who's that?
Yeah, very well could be. Nicholas Jamerson and the Morning Jays are coming, and he had quite the year this past year. You know, he just got put into the Kentucky Music Hall of Fame for what he's done and his previous acts. Then, you know, he went on and played Railbird this year in front of, I don't know, 30,000 plus people. So to come into a place like this and, you know, in an intimate setting with maybe 500 people tops, you're going to be experiencing music at its best. And this guy is one of Kentucky's finest for sure.
In this edition of the Brown County Hour, we are featuring three of the performers that are playing at Picking in the Backwoods. Let's work backwards. So in segment three, we're going to hear from Liam St. John. We're going to hear the Liam St. John track, Man of the North. So that's your Thursday headliner. Talk to us about Liam St. John.
Well, Liam is incredible, first of all. He was actually on The Voice. If you ever watched the TV show, he was on Gwen Stefani's team. You know, kind of shocked the world there and just kept building on it and got picked up by Atlantic Records. And now he's doing big things. He's all over the place. He actually filled in last year for a band that canceled last minute. Just one of the friend deals. He came up from Nashville and everyone just came to me and was like, that guy is awesome. Please bring him back. I'm like, well, here he is. He's going to headline this year. So it worked.
Well, we'll hear his song, Man of the North, near the end of today's broadcast. Talk to us also about Smilo and the Ghosts. We're going to hear a track from Smilo and the Ghost in segment two. And you told me that this artist is a fan favorite. What does that mean?
I think this band in particular is getting a lot of traction amongst the Americana scene. And they just been wowing crowds. They're getting on larger festivals. They're from Pennsylvania. They've been traveling a lot. Their first record that came out kind of blew up for them, and they kind of went viral on some music video stuff that was shot in at the Laurel Cove Music Festival. It's turned into a big deal in Kentucky, and they've just been building since, and we're lucky to have them, and super talented. Now, they're real unique, too. They blend genres and cross boundaries in a great way.
First, we're going to feature, as soon as we stop talking here, we're going to hear from your Friday headliner, which is Jeremy Pinnell.
Yes.
Talk to us about Jeremy Pinnell.
Jeremy's incredible. His record last year dropped that he did with Shooter Jennings was my favorite by far from anything I heard. And it was just turned into a masterpiece. And he's been at it for a long time, playing with Tyler Childers at Healing Appalachia.
Oh, wow.
To whatever. He's, you know, and he's close by. He's from Cincinnati. And I feel like just one thing for that guy, and he's going to be on a rocket ship to stardom. And you know, maybe this record might be it. I don't know. Good honky tonk blend with a little bit of rock mix, just really good. And his writing is really good because he's been through quite a lot, and you'll hear that in his lyrics, and it's an honest approach, so you can connect with it.
Well, we're going to close out this segment with the Jeremy Pinnell track, Too Much Sugar. But first, just give us a recap, where, when, all the just the brief details once more about Picking in the Backwoods.
Jump on pickinginthebackwoods.com August 20th through the 22nd. Gates are going to open at 3 o'clock on that Thursday. Then you can camp and stay with us till that Sunday morning. 25 plus bands, dance lessons, camping, bring your own instrument. And if you show up in town early, stop in over at the Firebird Tap House. They're going to have a couple bands playing there. Get some barbecue before the gates open, then head on in because it's just right across the road at Explore Brown County is where it's all taking place. So,
all right. We've been speaking with Justin Jett from the Coyote Radio Show and Podcast and Corey Flick talking about the third annual Pickin' in the Backwoods. And now we're going to hear the Jeremy Pennell track, Too Much Sugar. For the Brown County Hour on WFHB, I'm Chad Carruthers. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
You had too much sugar. Oh, it's making you cry.
This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB. I'm sitting here with one of my best friends from grade school. When did you move to town? This is Andy Miller. Hi, Andy.
I moved to town the day I was born.
Oh, that's right. The reason I'm interviewing Andy today is because your father, Jerry Miller, he was an important man in my life. He helped many of the youth in Brown County. He was a study hall teacher after many years of being a state police officer. And I want you to just go ahead and talk about your dad.
Well, I met my dad the first day I was born. Don't remember that, of course.
Sure.
He went to Indiana University. Met my mom, which actually her parents live in Brown County. My grandmother used to, her great-grandmother, seven generations now, had the Brown County Folk Shop.
Oh.
And worked that out with Andy Rogers. With my dad being at IU, met my mom. They ended up getting married. Later on, they had actually transferred my dad down to Bloomington.
Okay.
Those people out there know District 33. And he was still with the state police in Bloomington for his whole career.
Your dad got in that wreck as a state police officer.
He did. He got in a pretty bad accident. He was sitting on the side of the road over on 37 on Charlie Taylor Hill. And a triaxle Mack dump truck saw him, locked up his brakes, and was a career-ending accident for my dad.
Yeah.
His car was launched down the road. They found the door skin of the driver's side rear door like 280 feet down the road.
Oh, yeah. I remember. It was
had to pry him out of the car. Yeah, it's pretty.
It was gnarly.
Pretty nasty.
It was nasty.
Since my dad passed away, I've found out a lot about how he's affected people and change people in Brown County.
Part of his district was Brown County.
Absolutely.
For 20 years.
He was one of the three, at that point, state troopers in Brown County.
After his accident, Andy's dad became our study hall teacher at the high school. He affected so many kids' lives. And I know that a lot of them replied on Facebook and tell me about that.
After his accident, he had bone spurs in his neck, herniated disc in his back, in his elbows. He had to have surgery because the muscles had actually flipped to the other side of his elbow. So they had to go relocate all of them.
Oh, wow.
And he needed something to do. He loved to help people and to affect the community in a good way, and the community being Brown County. He got his study hall certificate with his education at IU, proceeded to be a substitute teacher to begin with, and then a study hall position opened up at the high school.
How long did he do that?
I think it was 2 to 3 years.
Okay. It was definitely when I was there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we all loved him.
Most people loved him.
Yeah. He was a people person.
He had two Shelbys when we were on Helmsburg Road, and he ended up trading those for a 1963 AC Cobra that he completely restored.
Oh, yeah. I got to watch that. It was great.
Lots of people have seen the car. His favorite thing to do was to share the joy of what that car could do.
Yep. I was one of the people he shared the joy with.
He loved
getting
rides.
He said, "Hold on, Lucy. Hold on."
And he always said, "Andy, it's not how fast we go. It's how quick we get there."
Right.
And he goes, "It's not speeding because you're not going over the speed limit, because that would just be wrong." You know.
Right. That's
but
hilarious.
He would get to the speed limit, whatever that may be.
And then call it.
Absolutely. He loved to give people that exhilaration and ride. One of the stories that I had heard about is everybody knew Doc Brester.
Yeah.
You know, the one and only vet in Brown County. Anybody who knew Doc Brester knew that he never took a vacation. My parents worked with Paulette to get the clinic covered with the kids that worked there as well, Anna and Teresa. And they kidnapped Doc Brester for a week and took him down to Nashville to Dollywood for, I think, was his first vacation ever.
Oh, wow.
You know, so the more I think about it, I could come up with a million stories about different people, you know, that he's helped, you know, like, you know, the Payne family. There was a gas spill at the Bigfoot where they were filling up the tanks and didn't pay attention. He actually called back to my mom because it was after dinner and everything else. She brought dinner in and snacks for everybody that was working there. I think it was Brian Gomm. He helped get his fingerprinting merit badge. Patrick Gomm. He helped Patrick get into law enforcement.
Chelsea Whitehorn.
Yep. Again. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. William Brown. He helped.
Suiting.
Yes.
Yes.
Matt.
To become a state police officer.
State police.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Your dad was a great guy. And that's why we're here shining a light on him today, because we all remember him so fondly.
Yes. Some of the people might remember me riding around on my dad's lap on his left leg in the police car with my arm hanging out the window.
During parades.
Oh, even driving down the road.
Yeah.
Which was legal back then.
Right.
Car seats were just a suggestion.
This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB.
Midterm elections seem a ways off, but they are just around the corner. Concerned about election integrity? Learn how possible threats are identified and resolved. When? Wednesday, August 19th, 6:30 p.m. at the Brown County Public Library with Professor Dr. Marjorie Hershey. Dr. Hershey is nationally recognized for her expertise on U.S. political parties, elections, and media in politics. This event is sponsored by Traveling University, League of Women Voters, Brown County, Brown County Public Library, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Columbus, Indiana. That date again is August 19th at 6:30 at the Brown County Library. More information on library events calendar.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from R. Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, Rick Fedick offers a folksy take on wordplay and why words matter. But first, we'll hear our interview with the first ever executive director of the Brown County Humane Society as we go on location with Suzanne Gillott. We'll end this segment with Pickin' in the Backwoods performers, Smilo and the Ghost, as they play their tune, The Farmer.
This is Chad Carruthers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB. I am on location at the Brown County Humane Society, and I'm here with the brand new executive director, Suzanne Gillott.
The very first. This marks a milestone in the 60-year history of Brown County Humane Society, so yes.
Why hasn't there been one before, and why do we have one now?
Well, gosh, so we have such a dedicated board and such incredible volunteers, and they have sustained this organization for so long, and they have done a lot, because it's a lot of work. And so they reached the point where they said, we need to figure out a succession plan. Like, we can't keep sustaining this and increasing our impact and our capacity to serve without an executive director. So that's when they started the search for an executive director and made that decision. And here I am. I feel so lucky.
So let's learn a little bit about you. So tell us where you came from and how did you end up here in Brown County?
Oh my goodness. So I have a very non-linear path here.
Okay.
So I am originally from North Carolina. Lived there most of my life. I started out, I worked in radio and television, actually.
Really?
And yes, and then I moved into nonprofit work and fell in love. But animal welfare has always been my passion, so I've always volunteered. I published a dog magazine. Everything animals I loved. And so I went looking for an animal welfare position, and I landed in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And then I decided it was time to move up. I wanted to find, you know, I really wanted to be super involved in animal welfare and lead an organization. And so I found Brown County, and I had never been here before. I came and I fell in love. I absolutely fell in love. It just felt familiar to me. And here I am.
As the executive director, what do you do? Like, what's a typical day?
Oh gosh, I would say there's no typical day, but probably everybody would say that. You know, I'm here to, you know, oversee and manage the day-to-day operations, to help with fundraising and to help, you know, help the board move forward with their strategic plans. So that's I bring everybody together and just make sure that those functions are running smoothly.
Well, you mentioned fundraising. What's the approach to fundraising for the shelter? How do you get people to open up and give?
You know, it's all about impact. It's about the impact that we are making on the community, the animals we are helping, but not only the animals, the people as well, because I always like to say, when you see animals suffering, there are people suffering. You know, that's where it comes from, and it's systemic. And we just try to do the best we can. Right now we serve probably over 700, 800 animals a year. But we also serve the people that love those animals. And I think that's the most important thing. And I always say my job as a fundraiser, when I have my fundraising hat on, is not to convince people to give us money, but to say, hey, do you want to make an impact? Do you want to help make this community a better place? Well, I can help you do that.
So what's been the biggest surprise? What's something that you've learned since you've arrived here?
You know, I think the biggest surprise for me was how much the community supports this little organization. We really do have an incredible community here, and I just feel so lucky to be a part of it. Everybody has been so welcoming. You know, sometimes you come to a small town and you think, oh, people are gonna be like, who is she? What does she think she's doing? But everybody has just embraced me and has just been so welcoming and so helpful. So that was wonderful to walk into. And we have an incredible staff. We have an incredible board. And this is truly an incredible organization.
Do you want to give us a quick tour?
Sure, okay. I would love to.
Awesome.
So this is our lobby. This is where people walk in and where they, our animal care staff will help them if they're looking for a cat or a dog or whatever they need. And one of the things that I love about our lobby is if you look up we have little paw prints on the ceiling, and that's, you know, just one of those little things that makes you smile.
So cute.
And we also have a cat room over here, so folks that enter the lobby can see the cats or two that are in there, depending on who's in there at the time. We've got Moses in there right now, who is an absolute sweetheart. And this is our intake room, so when we have a cat or a dog enter the shelter, this is where they're gonna come. They're gonna get looked at by our vet tech and assessed and get the shots and anything else that they need before they go into the shelter kennels. So we have a cat wing and a dog wing, and this is the cat wing, and we have multiple rooms. We have a get acquainted room, so someone finds a cat or a kitten that they absolutely love, and they can go into our get acquainted room to get acquainted with the cat or kitten. We have some free roaming rooms for the cats, and we also have rooms where they're in individual kennels. And then this is the dog wing. So we have kennels for the dogs. They can go indoors and outdoors, depending on the time of day. And we have different areas for the larger dogs, and we also have small dog kennels. We also have a grooming room because, as you know, dogs can get messy. The cats kind of take care of themselves, but we have a wash station, and so we can get them all clean if they get dirty. We also have several play yards so the dogs can get out. We do play groups with the dogs sometimes so they can get that dog-on-dog interaction and spend some time outdoors.
So like WFHB, this is a volunteer heavy, this organization depends on volunteers.
Absolutely, 100% we depend on, volunteers are the heart and soul of our organization. So we are always, always looking for volunteers. We're lucky that we have some regular volunteers, but we're always looking for more. And that can be, you know, you can come in and you can hang out with the cats, you can walk the dogs. If that's not your thing, you can also help with office tasks. You know, we have pretty much something for everyone. And another thing that's also fun to do is a doggy day out. So, you know, we're right next to the Brown County State Park and lots of other outdoor areas. If you want to come and take a dog out just to give them a break from the shelter, because even a few hours out is so helpful for their mental health, and just to get them out and into the community is a really good thing. So you can do a doggy day out as well.
So volunteers, mm-hmm. Always need volunteers.
Always, always, always. Ongoing need, yes.
You guys have great social media.
That is a volunteer thing.
Yeah?
Speaking of the need for volunteers, we have an incredible volunteer that does most of our social media, yeah.
So at Facebook, are you guys on any other social media?
We're on Facebook and Instagram.
Instagram,
mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Kids like the Insta. We also have a YouTube channel.
Oh, you have a YouTube channel?
Yes.
Okay, and so you just go to YouTube and search for Brown County Humane mm-hmm. Society?
Yep.
Okay, I understand you guys have got something big happening in August. What is that?
We do, oh my gosh, big is an understatement.
Okay.
We have our annual barn sale, and it runs August 13th through the 15th. And it is always, sometimes it's a destination for people. We hear from people that say that they plan their vacation to Brown County around the barn sale because they want to go shopping. So think of it as a big thrift store, a big garage sale.
Okay.
It is huge. It is a huge undertaking. It's a huge fundraiser for us. And if you like to shop, you're gonna get some good deals.
So people from the community donate items and then you sell them.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So give us the details, dates, location, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, so it is August 13th, 14th, and 15th, every day from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it is at Away A Day Campground, right down the street here from the shelter.
If people want more information about that event or about the shelter in general, where can they find you online?
bchumane.org.
bchumane.org. O-R-G.
That's it, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Suzanne Gillott, the new executive director at the Brown County Humane Society. Thank you so much for being on the Brown County Hour.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, for WFHB, this is Chad Carruthers.
Howdy, folks. This is Rick, and I might have something of interest for you. A heads up, I'm going to throw a little Bible at you. But don't worry, it's not about that. So bear with me. What I want to talk about are the words, and in particular, the word, word, W-O-R-D. And I'm going to do like many do, and I've picked out a few lines that suit my purpose. So here we go. John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word. See, right there it is. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And John 1:2. And the same was in the beginning with God. Well, let's go back to the beginning. Genesis 1:3. And God said, let there be light. What do you use when you say something? You use words. And God said, let there be a firmament, waters under the heavens and grass, etc., etc. He said all that. Now we use words to say things. We can read words, we can hear words, and we can also speak words. Words are important. They can be uplifting and positive, or they can tear down and be destructive. They can be used for teaching, for education or instruction. Words are used for daily communication. What's for dinner? And they can be used as art, prose, poetry, and song. Do you have words rambling around in your head, up in your brain? What are they doing up there? Are they reminding you of something? Are they thinking through something as you figure out what to do about the situation? Are they rehearsing a conversation that needs to happen sometime? How about the formation of that poem or song? I think we call that rambling thinking. How about thinking of something someone can use or something you can do as a service? So what can you do with all these words upstairs? Well, you can speak them when appropriate. Words can hurt or they can heal. Or, might I say, create something or stimulate a situation. So, be careful. What if you want to paint your living room blue? You go to the paint store and tell the employee that you want some blue paint. You still have to do the labor, but the words, saying the words, communication, help to facilitate the project. Let's say you're trying to write a poem or song and get stuck on a missing word that rhymes. If you let a couple people read your words, one of them just might be able to pull that perfect rhyming word out of their mind. Ta-da! A completed piece. I recall recently telling someone about a particular situation I was dealing with. As I was speaking, I came to a clearer understanding and better knew how to deal with that situation. That's one of the great benefits of words. If we take some of these rambling thoughts and put them into words, it's a form of bringing them into fruition or concretion, whether it be understanding or getting something done and brought into reality, into concretion. What if you have a great idea for a new product, something that will revolutionize life as we know it? My mom wrote a paper in high school about something she had dreamed up. Well, it requires words to write the paper. It was a toothpaste roll-up. You put the closed end of the tube into a slotted sleeve. That then fits into a cylinder. As you use the toothpaste, you can twist the slotted sleeve into the cylinder, and it keeps pushing the paste toward the open end of the tube. How about that? At some point in my young life, Mom bought me such an item. Someone else had the same idea and brought into manifestations. If you don't think that took many, many words to communicate the idea, to get it developed, to get it produced and marketed, then you're not getting the idea. I borrowed this quote, but it didn't say the author's name. The power of the tongue is real, meaning the spoken word. Stop saying I'm tired, I'm broke, I'm depressed, etc. Start saying I'm grateful, I'm growing, I'm thriving, I'm winning, I'm successful. Speak life into yourself. Your words shape your reality. So back in the beginning, when those thoughts, feelings, concepts, and mental images formulate and morph into words, and you group them into verbal communication, pay attention to what happens. Watch what becomes manifest. Thank you.
spongy bones. And all this time I wait. And I've been lying through these weary eyes. The daylight calls me by. Do you wanna go? And I've been thinking about where we'll be. 'Cause I can't stand none now. Do you wanna go with me? Saying, oh my brother, I should have been a farmer to grow like everyone does, to grow like everyone else.
We pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on Volunteer Powered Community Radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our final segment, Jim Eagleman emphasizes the importance of educating young people about nature. And Dave Seastrom has a tale of long-ago hardware stores. We'll close the show with Thursday's Pickin' in the Backwoods headliner, Liam St. John, as he performs Man of the North. But first, we'll listen to our interview with Chamberfest Board President Phil McCowan as he shares some information about this year's event.
I'm Sarah Lytle, and I'm here with the Brown County Radio Hour, and I'm really excited to talk to our guest because he's going to mention an event that comes up every August during my birthday. This is my treat to myself, and it's a real treat to have you here, Phil McCallan.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here. Yeah, this is our sixth season for Chamberfest Brown County, right here in good old Nashville, August 16th through the 22nd. And we'll try to go over the highlights, but you got to be sure and go to the website because all the information is there. It's chamberfestbrowncounty.com. Chamberfestbrowncounty.com.
And this runs a full week?
It does.
And it's various venues?
It is true. Our churches turn out to be our favorites because this is classical music with ensemble groups. And I guess the definition is like no more than 10 musicians. And they do not like to play amplified. So we like this relatively small venue of a church. We have St. Agnes Catholic Church. They've been with us for several years. And then the Nashville United Methodist Church, outstanding acoustics. And then we do one performance at our Brown County Playhouse in the middle of the week.
Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this has always been a fun time. It is the one concert that is ticketed because it's through the Playhouse. And I should definitely mention all the others are free. Just come and enjoy the music. This one this year is called Letters from the Front. This is a new piece written by a New York City composer named Patrick Zimmerle. The libretto is literally letters from the front. These are letters from soldiers in the front at a whole range of wars that American soldiers have been in. They're really very touching. The music is beautiful. It's for piano and four voices, male and female. And I think it's rather somber, but on the other hand, we think it's a perfect pick for honoring U.S. veterans on this 250th anniversary for America.
And another thing I like about the event this year is, well, always you bring world-class musicians, but it's such an international flair. And to me, that represents our country, too. You're kicking it off with a young artist quartet from Greece, Lithuania, Estonia, and the United States. And then we go on to Latin American Baroque.
Yes, it's amazing. We're so fortunate. We have an outstanding artistic director, Andreas Ioannidis, who actually got his PhD in piano performance from IU Jacobs School of Music. He's now in Dublin teaching there, and he organizes all of the musicians, works with them to figure out their repertoire. The guy is just an amazing set of alliances for musicians all over the world. So you're right, it has a very international flavor. You know, you may not like classical music, but I have so many times now talked with folks after performances that say, you know, hearing this music live here in this intimate setting, I loved it. I also want to mention the closing Saturday night. That's nine instrumentalists from, again, all over, including Andreas Ioannidis playing piano. This is a fun program. The Martinu Revue de Cuisine, a Saint-Saëns septet for trumpet, piano, and strings. And then there is a transcription, an arrangement of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue for a small ensemble, if you can believe that. So it's going to be a really good program.
So wrapping it up with jazz and bassoon.
Yep, indeed. And, you know, we can only do this because we have such great sponsors and donors here in the town. And that's why we can put on these free performances.
And dedicated people like you. Thank you so much, Phil, for being here. This is Sarah Lytle with the Brown County Hour.
There are many studies that say early exposure to nature allows children to grow up more appreciative. They become more aware of how things work in nature if they were encouraged at an early age. How we become more responsible stewards of our environment, of course, begins with learning about it. And I suspect all nature lovers listening now to my voice here on Nature Ramblings had some kind of childhood experience in nature. This is absolutely the reason I wanted to work in conservation. I grew up in a home with plenty of outdoor experiences. Our farm and the work, as I was asked to do there, kept me busy. But when there was free time, I was out and about with fishing rod or my BB gun, running the trails, exploring the woods. Another important factor helping me get tuned in was our grade school classes and the nature study we did weekly. I recall each of my elementary classes, first through sixth grade, had some kind of nature table. Here we collected things found on our way to school, and time was given to each student to explain what was found. Snake skins, bones, feathers, and unused bird nests accumulated on our table throughout the year, and the tables were only cleared each spring for a place to line up our milk cartons with newly planted garden seeds. The interest each teacher took was an added incentive for us to learn. If there was an element of excitement or surprise in the assignment to learn about leaves or birds, for example, their delivery, the teacher's exploratory manner and interest, was absolutely contagious. We could also add to our own story to the topic, and it was considered just as important as what the teacher was telling us. This ownership in the event brought it closer. We felt we could add to the discussion, and if sometimes it was not all that correct, it didn't matter. Nature was something we all grew to know. Each spring and in all grades, I saw the girls brought in freshly cut flowers. They didn't grow them, we knew, but they got their mothers to share flowers from their own flower gardens. The stems were carefully cut, neatly wrapped in tinfoil. Tulips, hyacinths, and lilacs were put into vases and displayed on our nature tables. I have to admit, the aroma of these flowers was wonderful, and the memory has stayed with me. In fact, every time I smell lilacs, it takes me back to that event. Us boys, I suspect not to be outdone, also brought in some kind of plant, but the dead pine branch and the prickly weed was no match for the flowers. And the girls, they beamed with joy. They thought themselves very special, and we all approved, but there was definitely some competition. Often our nature study took us outside in all kinds of weather, all seasons. If you didn't dress appropriately, you found out why clothing was mentioned the day before. If a raincoat was forgotten, you huddled in with a friend and shared the umbrella. Winter clothing, boots, and hats were never forgotten, and since teachers kept a box of mittens and scarves, no one suffered. At first, a few complaints of the cold, but our explorations took priority. It was liberating, and we soon forgot about any discomfort. Short strolls around the schoolyard usually produced a variety of tracks in the snow, and longer walks into the nearby woods, we saw grassy tunnels and nuts partially eaten. Back in class, there was always a discussion of what we saw, how animals and birds survived the winter, and where some animals went to avoid the cold. Each spring, our walks took us to the town park with a pond, cattails, ducks, dragonflies, and frogs. And I often think back to that humble beginning for me, a chance to talk in front of the class, something that never really bothered me, while others often hated it. Once we were asked what we wanted to be when we grew up, others were asked what they thought we'd be. Several of my classmates said I'd become a scientist or a politician. I wasn't sure, but I knew I'd have to do something with the outdoors. Years ago, in my office at the Parks Nature Center, I came upon a book entitled Mother Nature's Michigan. It's a series of cartoons created by a biologist who worked for the DNR. On one page, he drew two scenes. On one side, a boy planting trees, watching birds, and on the other, the same boy is shown killing a snake and throwing stones at a rabbit. It's entitled As the Twig is Bent. How we learn to live with nature starting out as a youth has a lot to do with how we act as adults. You'll never convince me that introducing the outdoors, learning about plants and animals, doesn't have lasting effects. It does. Getting kids outside is just the start to a life of discovery and awareness, and with awareness comes appreciation, and when we appreciate things, we protect them. Nature Ramblings, and I'm Jim Eagleman for the Brown County Hour, and I'll talk with you next time.
When we first moved to Brown County, we lived on Three-Story Hill Road just outside of Fruitdale. The old name for this town was Midway, and I suppose it was called that because it was midway between Morgantown and Bean Blossom. Our old farmhouse needed all kinds of work, and having access to a good hardware store was essential. Fortunately, our location put us directly between two of the best hardware stores in the area. Helmsburg Hardware and Furniture Store was a gathering place where needed items could be found and good conversations were had. They sold just about everything that you needed to live in Brown County, and they had stoves and oil lamps, refrigerators, chainsaws, and all kinds of hardware. They also ran a repair service where Chelsea Sisson worked on anything they sold and most things that people brought into the store. Clarence and Goldie had a daughter named Lois Marie who won the Miss Indiana contest, and her picture was under the glass display case next to the cash register. When she passed away, Jim Cullum from the Cullum Broom Factory, located across the street from the hardware, made a broom dedicated to her honor called the Miss Indiana. Originally, the hardware store was a garage where cars and tractors and small engines were repaired. Legend has it that Clarence Chitwood was an absolute genius that could fix anything. Unfortunately, this was not the Clarence that I had the privilege to know. When he was still a young man, Clarence contracted a severe case of rheumatic fever. His temperature got so high it caused permanent brain damage, and he was never the same man again. His wife, Goldie, took over their business and converted it into the hardware slash general merchandise store to provide income for their family. The fever may have altered his intellect, but his humanity was absolutely intact, and Clarence was one of the nicest people I ever met. He was always smiling and trying to be helpful in the store. Goldie had little patience when it came to working with him, and often he was so clueless that she would shove him out of the way and take over the conversations with their customers. I remember her saying, "Get out of the way, Clarence. I'll take care of it." He was such a sweet guy that none of this bothered him. Goldie prided herself on having access to just about anything a person wanted or needed. If she didn't have a particular item in her store, she was famous for saying, "I can order it." Clarence lived to be 84, and Goldie lived to be 91. They sold the store in 86, and when the time came that he had nothing to do, I used to see Clarence wandering the streets of Helmsburg. The last time I saw him, I pulled over to say hi, and he said, "I can't remember who you are, but I'm mighty glad to see you." The other hardware store I frequented was Stockton's in Morgantown. This store was owned and operated by the brothers Joe and Ira Stockton. It was more focused on hardware, but at one time they owned and ran a lumber yard that was across the street from their hardware store. The lumber yard burned to the ground a few years before I moved to Brown County, but for many years after, you could clearly see where it used to be. Unlike Goldie, who could take me or leave me, Joe and Ira all but adopted me. They taught me how to wire a pump and a three-way switch and how to sweat copper pipes so they didn't leak. They also instructed me on the tools I needed for country living and how to properly use them. Unlike Goldie, who never spoke of politics, Joe and Ira were staunch followers of Brother John Birch. I knew of the Birch Society from having read None Dare Call It Treason, but I was not myself a follower. In order to maintain our friendship, I never let them know that. Shopping with them was like visiting with family, and we always shared a few laughs and stories. They were considerably older, and they tried to sell their store so they could retire. My guess is the numbers didn't look so good, and because of that, they never found a buyer. As I recall, Joe went first, and then, when I would visit, Ira looked lonely and sad. I remember hearing the news that Ira had passed, and before too long, the goods were sold at auction and the building was demolished. Both of these establishments helped me get off to a good start in country living, and I think of them with warm regard to this very day. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
So use me for shade from the blistering sun. Thanks for tuning in to episode 173 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.